Okay, let's jump right in. We've got a stack of material here that someone shared with us, and it's all about a topic that sounds a bit dry. Price stability.
Yeah, price stability.
But trust us, it touches every single one of us directly.
It absolutely does. And while the goal, you know, stable prices seems simple enough, the language around it, inflation, deflation, disinflation, well, it can feel like a whole other language sometimes.
Totally. So our mission for this deep dive is really to cut through all that. We're going to take this material and pull out the absolute core understanding you need.
What these terms actually mean.
Exactly. And how we even try to measure changes in prices, what causes them, and critically, what their real world impact is on you, your wallet, everything.
Mm-hmm. We're essentially going to guide you through it, pulling out the key insights and connections from these articles and notes we were given. It covers the basics, the measurement hurdles, the drivers.
And the consequences.
Yeah.
Right. Think of this as getting the essential understanding without having to sift through pages yourself. We're talking definitions, measurements, causes, effects.
And we should probably start with the most fundamental building blocks.
Good idea.
When you think about a healthy economy, having stable prices is really, really crucial for confidence. If you're unsure what things will cost next week or maybe next year.
Yeah, it's incredibly hard to make plans.
Right. Whether you're a household or a business, it creates uncertainty.
Absolutely. And the main thing that messes with that stability is inflation. What we learn from the material here is that inflation is defined as a sustained increase.
And sustained is key.
Sustained increase in the general price level of goods and services across the whole economy. The most critical takeaway here is simple. When inflation is happening, the purchasing power of your money falls.
Mm-hmm. That $10 you have buys less today than it did yesterday. Simple as that.
And it's typically measured as an annual percentage change, right?
Yeah, that percentage tells you how much value your money's losing each year, generally speaking. So if inflation is prices generally going up, deflation is the opposite. It's a sustained decrease in the general price level. Now, initially, you might think, oh, great, my money buys more.
Sounds good on the surface.
It does. But the material is really clear that widespread deflation is usually a sign of serious economic trouble, often linked to falling wages, falling demand, people putting off buying things because they expect prices to fall further.
Which just makes demand fall more.
Exactly. It can become a nasty cycle. So it's generally not seen as a healthy economic state at all.
Okay, so that brings us to a really important distinction that the material highlights. Disinflation. This one trips people up.
It does. Because it sounds like deflation, but it's not.
Right. Disinflation means prices are still rising, but the rate at which they're rising is slowing down.
Like you're still driving forward, but you've taken your stick to gas a bit.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
The speed of the price increase is decreasing, but it's definitely not going in reverse like deflation. Getting that difference is really key.
So just to nail those down quickly, sustained price increase is inflation. Sustained price decrease is deflation. And a slowing down of the rate of price increase, that's disinflation.
Okay, that makes sense. But how do we even know if prices are generally going up or down across an entire economy?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you and I don't buy everything. And different prices change at different rates.
Ah, that brings us right to the crucial challenge of measurement. And the most widely watched tool for this, the one you always hear about, is the Consumer Price Index.
The CPI,
yeah.
Right, and the idea behind the CPI, as the material explains it, is that it measures the average change over time in the prices paid by, well, urban consumers for a standard basket of goods and services.
It's meant to represent the typical cost of living. What does the average person buy?
And the material lists things you'd expect in that basket. Food, housing.
Transportation, healthcare, clothing, you know. Stuff people spend money on regularly.
And it's presented as an index number, right?
Yeah.
Usually set to 100 in the chosen base year.
Exactly. So if the CPI goes from 100 in the base year to, say, 110 a year later.
That's how they represent a 10% average price increase for that specific basket over that period.
Mm-hmm. There's also the Producer Price Index, the PPI.
Hmm.
That looks at prices from the perspective of businesses' input costs, wholesale prices.
That can sometimes give earlier signals, maybe?
Yeah, potentially. But the CPI is the number most relevant to your cost of living as a consumer.
The process sounds simple enough on paper, reading through it. Figure out the basket, track the prices of those items, calculate the total cost, compare it to the base year cost using a formula.
Right. Current basket cost, base year basket cost, times 100, basically.
But what's really fascinating, and where the material gets interesting, is why accurate measurement is actually incredibly difficult. there are some major hurdles.
Oh, definitely. It's way harder than it sounds.
The first big one they mention is substitution bias.
Yeah.
Makes total sense. If the price of, say, beef goes way up, you might switch to chicken.
Right.
But the CPI basket is fixed for a while, so it keeps counting the now expensive beef, potentially overstating the true rise in your cost of living, because it doesn't immediately capture your clever switch to cheaper chicken.
Exactly. It lags behind consumer behavior.
Yeah.
Then you have the issue of new products. Think about smartphones, streaming services, things that didn't exist decades ago or even a few years ago. They weren't in the original basket.
So when genuinely new important items come out, it takes time for them to be included and properly weighted in the index. Their initial impact on spending and prices gets missed.
Precisely. And quality adjustments.
Boy, that's a tough one.
How so?
Well, if the price of a car goes up by 5%, is it just inflation? Or are you paying 5% more because it now has amazing new safety features, better fuel economy, maybe a standard backup camera that wasn't there before?
Right. How do you separate a pure price rise from just paying more for a genuinely better product?
It's a huge statistical challenge. Mm-hmm. They try to adjust for quality, but it's inherently difficult and subjective. And then there's the fact that the average basket might not look anything like your personal shopping cart.
Exactly. The material notes these household differences. The CPI might not accurately reflect the spending patterns or the price changes faced by, say, retirees versus young families, or high-income versus low-income groups.
Your personal inflation rate could be quite different from the headline number.
Absolutely. Plus, you've got geographical variation. Prices aren't the same in New York City as they are in rural Kansas.
True.
And there's always a time lag. Collecting all this data, processing it, publishing it, it takes time. So the number you see reported is always looking back a bit based on this complex estimation.
So summing that up, all these factors mean the CPI is what, the best estimate we have?
It is. It's the standard measure, but it's an inherently imperfect measure of the change in the true cost of living for every single person. You have to take it with a grain of salt.
Understanding those measurement challenges naturally leads us to another absolutely crucial concept from this material: the difference between nominal and real values.
Yes. This is fundamental.
It really is. This is about looking past the number on your paycheck or the price tag to what that number actually means in terms of what you can buy.
So nominal values are just the raw numbers, right? Money values expressed in...
Right. The material uses a great GDP example. Let's say nominal GDP is $1,100 billion and the CPI is 110. This means prices are 10% higher than the base year when, let's say, the CPI was 100 and nominal GDP was $1,000 billion.
So you calculate real GDP as 1,100 billion, 110, 100, which equals $1,000 billion.
And what that simple calculation reveals is pretty powerful, isn't it?
It is. Even though the dollar amount of GDP went up by $100 billion, once you account for that 10% price increase, the real value of the economic activity, the actual volume of goods and services produced, hasn't increased at all compared to the base year.
It shows you the substance, not just the potentially misleading inflated number.
Yeah.
Vital for understanding actual economic growth.
Couldn't agree more.
Okay, so we know what inflation is, how we try to measure it, and how tricky that is, and how to see through the nominal numbers to the real picture. What actually causes prices to rise across the board like this? What's behind it?
Well, the material we looked at highlights two main drivers. First, there's what's called demand pull inflation.
Demand pull.
This happens when there's essentially too much demand chasing too few goods. Aggregate demand outstrips aggregate supply.
So basically, everyone wants to buy stuff more than the economy can currently produce.
Pretty much. What triggers this? The notes mention things like a surge in consumer spending, maybe people feel confident or have extra money, or increased government spending. Businesses investing heavily, even strong foreign demand for a country's exports can pull prices up.
When everyone's trying to buy limited goods, buyers effectively bid up the prices. Makes sense.
The classic too much money chasing too few goods scenario.
Okay, what's the other main driver?
The other side of the coin is cost push inflation. This happens when the costs of producing goods and services increase for businesses.
Ah, so it's coming from the supply side.
Exactly. And businesses facing these higher costs tend to pass them on to consumers in the form of higher prices to protect their profit margins.
What kind of costs are we talking about?
Think about rising wages for workers, a major input cost, or the cost of raw materials like oil, metals, lumber going up significantly.
Yeah, or like we saw recently, major disruptions in supply chains that make inputs more expensive or just harder to get hold of.
All those things can push production costs up. Higher taxes on inputs could do it too. These increased costs reduce the amount businesses are willing to supply at current prices, leading to higher prices for consumers.
Got it. Demand pull is too much demand. Cost push is rising production costs. Are there other factors?
And the material does touch on a few other contributing factors, yeah. Like imported inflation.
Meaning?
Where the prices of goods we buy from other countries rise, this could be due to inflation happening in those countries or changes in exchange rates making imports more expensive for us.
Okay.
Then there's the dreaded wage price spiral.
Uh-oh.
This is where workers demand higher wages to keep up with rising prices.
Which increases business costs.
Leading businesses to raise prices further.
Prompting workers to demand even higher wages. And round it goes.
Exactly. It can be a self-perpetuating cycle. And finally, the material mentions monetary inflation, the idea that if the central bank creates too much money or credit relative to the economy's ability to produce goods and services, it can devalue the existing money and, well, push prices up.
So a mix of demand factors, cost factors, and potentially monetary policy.
Understanding these causes helps explain the complex forces at play behind the price changes we actually see.
Okay, definitions, measurement, nominal versus real, causes. We've built the picture. Now for the big so what. What are the real world consequences of inflation? Why does all of this matter so much to you, the listener?
Well, the most immediate and obvious consequence, as we touched on earlier, is the hit to your purchasing power.
Yeah, this is the one everyone feels.
As prices rise, your money simply buys less stuff than it used to, period. That's the bottom line for individuals.
Also has a really significant impact on savings and investment, according to the material.
It does. It discourages saving, especially if the interest rate you earn on your savings account is lower than the inflation rate.
Because in real terms, your savings are actually shrinking, losing value.
Precisely. And it creates uncertainty for businesses. If they're not sure what their costs will be or what prices they can charge in the future, it makes them hesitant to make big, long-term investment decisions.
That makes sense. Okay, this leads to a really interesting point the material makes. Income redistribution. This is fascinating.
It is, because inflation doesn't affect everyone equally. There are winners and losers.
Who typically loses out?
People on fixed incomes are often hit hardest. Think retirees relying on pensions that don't automatically adjust for the rising cost of living. Their purchasing power just steadily erodes over time. Savers, as we mentioned.
And who might actually benefit?
Borrowers can benefit, surprisingly. Yeah. Especially those with fixed rate loans, like mortgages. Why? Because the real value of the debt they owe shrinks over time. The dollars they pay back in the future are worth less in terms of purchasing power than the dollars they originally borrowed.
Wow. So inflation isn't just a neutral event. It actively shifts wealth around within the economy. That's a huge point.
It absolutely is. It also creates general business uncertainty, as we touched on with investment. It just makes planning harder for companies forecasting costs, revenues, making decisions.
And it can affect a country's trade balance, right? The balance of payments.
Yes. If domestic prices rise faster than prices in other countries, your country's exports become relatively more expensive for foreigners to buy.
Which could hurt export sales.
Right. And at the same time, imports become relatively cheaper for domestic consumers.
So you might buy more foreign goods, potentially leading to a trade deficit.
Exactly. The material even mentions some more specific, almost tangible costs, like menu costs.
Menu costs, like literally the cost of printing new menus.
Yeah, or updating price tags, changing catalogs, reprogramming vending machines. When prices are changing frequently due to inflation, these costs add up for businesses. It's a real, albeit small, drain on resources.
Huh, never thought of that. And what about shoe leather costs? That sounds historical.
It kind of is, but the concept still applies. Historically, it referred to the wear and tear on your shoes from running back and forth to the bank more often.
Why would you do that?
In times of high inflation, holding cash was costly because it was rapidly losing value. So people would try to keep less cash on hand, meaning more frequent trips to withdraw smaller amounts.
Oh, I see.
While we might not physically run to the bank as much today with digital banking, the underlying concept remains. Inflation causes people and businesses to spend time and effort managing their cash holdings to minimize the loss from inflation, effort that could have been used more productively.
Interesting. There's also something called fiscal drag.
Yes. fiscal drag. This happens in tax systems with progressive brackets where higher incomes are taxed at higher rates.
Okay.
As your nominal income rises just to keep pace with inflation, it can push you into a higher tax bracket.
Even though your real income, your actual purchasing power, hasn't increased at all.
Exactly. So you end up paying a higher percentage of your income in taxes purely due to inflation interacting with the tax system. It's like an unlegislated tax increase.
Ouch. That can definitely bite.
And finally, circling back a bit, the material highlights the damage to international competitiveness. If your country's inflation rate is consistently higher than your trading partners,
okay, your goods become less attractive on the global market.
Right. Which can hurt exports, potentially weaken the currency, and cause broader economic issues.
Wow. So what started with just a simple definition of rising prices really cascades into this whole wide range of consequences. It affects everything from your daily spending and savings to national economic performance, investment, and even global trade flows.
Absolutely. It's deeply interconnected. The material really underscores that achieving and maintaining price stability, avoiding both high inflation and damaging deflation, is fundamental for sustainable economic growth and, importantly, for a fairer distribution of wealth and opportunity.
And getting that measurement right, despite the challenges, gives us a clearer picture of true economic well-being.
Though, as we saw, getting it right is the tricky part.
Indeed. So, wrapping up our deep dive into this material on price stability, we've unpacked the core terms, inflation, deflation, and that crucial middle ground, disinflation. We looked at the main tool for measurement, the CPI, and perhaps more importantly, all the reasons why getting that number exactly right is so incredibly challenging.
Substitution bias, new goods, quality changes. Yeah, lots of hurdles.
We saw how vital it is to look past those nominal surface level numbers to understand the true value in real terms, what your money actually buys. We explored the key drivers behind inflation, those demand pull and cost push forces.
And we detailed the wide-ranging consequences, from the direct hit to your purchasing power and your savings, to those really fascinating ways it can redistribute income and impact businesses and international trade.
Gaining this understanding, hopefully, really does equip you, the listener, to better interpret the economic headlines you see every day.
Mm-hmm. And maybe make more informed personal finance decisions and just generally make more sense of the economic world around you. It helps you see what's really happening beyond just the numbers on the page.
As you encounter discussions about inflation or the economy moving forward, maybe the key thing to ponder, drawing from our discussion and the source material, is this. Given all those inherent challenges in accurately measuring price changes across such a complex, dynamic economy, how precise can our understanding of price stability truly be in practice?
That's a great question.
And considering all the diverse, sometimes conflicting consequences we discussed, hurting savers, but helping borrowers, for instance, achieving that crucial goal of stable prices really does seem like an incredibly delicate balancing act. It's a constant challenge for policymakers, with very real impacts for everyone, made even trickier by the fuzziness of the measurements themselves.